So yeah, I'll just stack these notes right on top of the Intellivision.
Intellivision games, yes.
When I was a kid, a buddy of mine had an Intellivision. He's like, hey, you want to go to my house and play Intellivision? And my creative mind went directly to virtual reality because I didn't understand that it was a console.
Right.
I thought he meant go play in the television somehow. And
you know, Tron type mode.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go do that. And then I was kind of disappointed when it turned out to be like a baseball game.
Right. Like, oh, we're man. All pixelated and everything.
This is kind of like Atari.
So my cousin had the Intellivision, and we used to jump on it all the time. I enjoyed it a lot. I got bored with it real quick, though. The games aren't exactly engaging. You play them a couple times, and that's it.
That was still such a new technology back then. They didn't know.
Yeah.
What? They were just competing with the other guys who were making the similar games.
Yeah, everything was the same.
Not a whole lot of innovation. Well, welcome everybody to episode 30 of the Scary Dad Podcast. It is May 8th, 2017, and we're going to discuss macabre memes, the Blair Witch Project, Slender Man, and other facets of horror that seem to kind of spread on their own without a tremendous amount of marketing or money behind them.
Right, utilizing the new method of urban legends of the internet.
So strap in, we're going to talk about some very modern things, but first we're going to go back in time a little bit and talk about some history. History subject's kind of short, but there's one thing that was just crazy to me. 1794, branded a traitor during the Reign of Terror, French chemist Antoine Lavoisier, who was also a tax collector, is tried, convicted, and guillotined all in one day.
It didn't take long for that.
No.
Speedy justice.
So, coming off our executions, swift justice there.
Yeah.
But who was this guy? Because a lot of times I'll look and I'll be like, oh, that's interesting. Let me click on the link. Well, Lavoisier is considered the father of modern chemistry. He discovered the role oxygen plays in combustion. He recognized and named oxygen and hydrogen. He helped construct the metric system. He wrote the first extensive list of elements. He predicted the existence of silicon. This was back in the 1780s.
Right.
He was the first to establish sulfur as an element rather than a compound. And he was the one that discovered that the mass of matter always remains the same, although the forms may change.
So now, of course, we got to know, with all the stuff this guy did, why did they go ahead?
He was part of the aristocracy, first mm-hmm. of all. And he was a member of a cabal that, which he actually founded, which was kind of like a tax collector group. But it was a private tax collector group. So what they would do is, rather than having the IRS, they would have like the volunteer IRS, and he kind of started it up. So basically, you'd go out and shake down people for their taxes. He wouldn't personally, but his employees would go out and shake down people for their taxes and then give the government their cut and then keep theirs. And it caused them to become very wealthy. He was actually a classical liberal. Like, he was really all for kind of freedom and liberty in the individual, and he was obviously a chemist and a man of learning and of education. But when that whole revolution swept through, they took him to trial, and his lawyers or his defense attorneys, however you might want to say it, appealed for his to be spared based on his contributions to society,
mm-hmm.
and the judge said, no, we don't need chemists, we need freedom for individuals, and off with his head.
Any idea how old he was when it happened?
I didn't write that down, okay. But he was I would probably guess 40s or 50s.
Okay, because I'd be just thinking about what he could have come up with had he not been executed so quickly.
Yeah, I read the page, it was a Wikipedia article or whatever, but once the dust settled, I mean, the French Revolution was horrible.
Yeah.
And the tide turned on the French Revolution relatively quickly. Once they realized that society was just collapsing all around them, they it got shut down, and things went pretty much back to normal. Mm-hmm. As normal as it can be after you've killed off all of your contributors to society, right. and your upper all of your producers, and then, you know, all you got left is peasants. But
right. With no direction.
No, they said that it there was some quote about him saying that in just a few minutes that all of his things that he discovered, it would be 100 years before another mine came along that would be as brilliant.
Right.
And, I mean, that's tragic, but, man, when you get swept up in that that mob mentality, that political furor where right is right and wrong is wrong and there's no gray area. And
you're just looking for some type of revenge.
And you really don't know anything about what you're fighting for. You're just mad.
Yeah.
That's...
looking for somebody to pay for the things that have happened.
Mm-hmm. Lighter note, 1886. John Pemberton sells the first Coca-Cola. It's not really scary, but...
significant.
It's significant. 1912, Paramount Pictures was founded. They've made some movies that we like.
Oh yeah, a few. They've been around for a while, that's for sure.
All right. Notable births, 1884, Harry S. Truman, 33rd President of the United States, dropped 2 atom bombs. He's only one who's ever dropped an atom bomb in war, and he dropped 2 of them.
You know, Red Fox, he talks about him a little bit. He talks about when he fought in Korea, and you know, he mentioned that, just as a joke, you know, the foxhole was named after him because, you know, he didn't want to be on the front line, so he just wanted to hide out, and he made the foxhole one. He said, who else were they going to name it after? Truman? Could you imagine getting in a hairy S-hole?
Hell no. 1911, Robert Johnson sold his soul at the crossroads.
Yes, indeed, man. It's one of my favorite movies, bro.
The father of, basically, of rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, but you gotta wonder how much of that legend there is true. I mean, it,
I read not a lot about Robert Johnson, but it's kind of funny. I have a friend that we started playing guitar at the same time. And this guy, he was never really, I mean, he was always sort of obsessive with things. He always just had this need to master things. But he wasn't really, like, he didn't have any tics. You know, he didn't, like, twist or jerk whenever he moved. But, man, he wanted to learn how to play guitar. He basically locked himself in his room for, like, 6 months. And by the time he was done, he could copy. He couldn't necessarily write, but he could emulate. He could do all the Van Halen tapping. He was studying deeply into Vi. There's these books of scales. They're called the Guitar Grimoires. It's kind of neat because it's got like a circle of fifths, but it's shaped in such a way that it looks like a pentagram or okay. some kind of symbol. And it's just these books of nothing but scales, all kinds of different melodic minors and minor, you know, whatever. And he had them memorized. And these books were, this was back in the 90s, man. These books were like $30, $40 a pop. And they had like multiple colors. So you had the black one, the green one, the red one. And they were all of different levels of difficulty, or not necessarily difficulty, but of rarity. Mm-hmm. Like, these are not necessarily scales that are always used in all kinds of, in a lot of Arabic stuff and a lot okay. of Indian stuff or whatever. And he had these scales just memorized. And he could just fly his fingers over a guitar. Like, and we're talking like maybe a year of practice, but that's all he did. That's all he did. It was summer of high school. He didn't have no job, didn't have nothing to do. He just sat there playing his guitar. And same thing with Robert Johnson. He was kind of dicking around on the guitar, and he disappeared for a summer, and he came back, and he was really good. And everybody was like, man, you know, there's only one way that could have been done. And of course, he allowed that legend to grow.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It made him popular. So he's not going to deny it. But I think a lot of practice and a lot of drive, and he sealed his space in the history of rock and roll.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
I bet you a lot of it's true. I don't know how much he sold his soul to the devil, but maybe he walked out and the devil was like, practice, boy. That's all you got to do is practice real hard. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. <laughs> 1940 gave us Peter Benchley, the guy who wrote Jaws, mm-hmm. and The Deep, and The Island, and Beast, and White Shark. So many good books.
Oh, yeah.
Me being a shark lover and a sea lover, Jaws was not a very good book. It was a great movie, but the book was not. The book had a, like 90% soap opera intrigue and boring crap and 10% shark. All the rest of his books had a lot of really good stuff in there. So, 1940 also, we got Tony Tennille from Captain Tennille. And did you know, little music trivia for you, you're familiar with Pink Floyd?
Yeah.
The Dark Side of the Moon. I'm not sure the name of the track right off the top of my head, but the one where the girl is just, the woman's just singing and kind of moaning mm-hmm. over the piano, that's her.
Oh, really? Okay.
And she likes to tell stories of, like, you know, she met some cab driver that was jamming Pink Floyd and was like, oh, you're Captain Tennille, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yeah, I should be able to sign your Pink Floyd record over there because I'm on that record. All right, notable deaths on this date in 1988. We lost Robert Heinlein, science fiction writer extraordinaire. Stranger in a Strange Land is still one of the best books I've mm-hmm. ever read. He's responsible for quite a bit. What's that one with Neil Patrick Harris? Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
He wrote that. He wrote quite a few that were just phenomenal in the genre. In 2012, we lost Maurice Sendak, who, Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah.
So if you're
classic book.
If you're a horror fan and you've never read Where the Wild Things Are, you need to get on it.
Oh yeah, it's a great book, great book.
So let's get into the heart of it. You kind of brought this one to the fore, so tell me how you were inspired. Are you sitting over a big bowl of scary spaghetti?
Well, you know, we usually talk about stuff that we can relate to when we were coming up, when we were younger. You know, old people stuff, as my kids would say. And my kids listen to the podcast, of course, and one day they asked, now, why don't you talk about creepypasta? And I said, what in the hell is creepypasta? I have no idea what you're talking about. So they kept on and on about, you know, I need to check it out. You know, and I knew some of the things that have evolved from creepypasta I was familiar with, like Slender Man and a few others. But I said, okay, well, I'll get with Billy and we'll check and see if we can do an episode on creepypasta. So me and Billy decided to go ahead and not just talk about creepypasta, but just in general, this new way of what I would consider, you know, modern urban legends and their ability to get a hold in culture through the internet, you know, through this new means of communication that we have that, you know, so many people use, and it can cause things to spread like wildfire really, really fast. You know, it's now is a time in our lives where, you know, newspapers are yesterday's news. Everything comes out through the internet immediately, and, you know, there's no hiding from information. You know, it used to be if you didn't know something, you had to wait till you met somebody that knew about it to find out about it.
Right.
Now you can wake up and, you know, if you want to know when is Mother's Day this year, you just get on Google it and you can find out real quick.
You find out when it is in 2054.
Right.
Just within seconds.
Right. So it's a different, we have a different way of communicating now and just spreading information. You know, it used to be word of mouth. You know, I took an oral history class years ago, and it's a lot different now. Like I said, stuff just immediately gets thrown out there. Mm-hmm. It becomes old news real quick.
It does. And then sometimes it doesn't become old news ever.
Right.
I'm so glad that I was a teenager in a time before the internet and before camera phones everywhere. You know, on the one hand, I think it might have been easier for things like meeting girls. I mean, whenever you're kind of a geek and you're sitting alone in your room wishing that, you know, you could talk to that girl, it'd be nice to be able to set up a profile and list all of your favorite bands and,
right,
you know, cut out some cool pictures or whatever and have that representation, that avatar, so, you know, of you. But then, God, man, you get on a drunken tear one night and you lose all your friends forever if they find out you're a Republican. You're like, I mean, really. So it's it's a double-edged sword there. But
yeah, it's a different type.
And I'm not a Republican, by the way. I'm just using that as an example.
It's like Pete Holmes said once. You know, you you can wake up one day and just all of a sudden in your head, you're wondering what city was Tom Petty born in, and you walked around until you finally met some girl that was wearing a Tom Petty shirt, and you said, "Hey, do you know what city Tom Petty was born in?" And all of a sudden, she knew it, and then she became your wife, and you got married.
Right.
You know, now just you go to the Google machine, and that's it. Everything is right there. It kind of sucks because it's a you don't appreciate learning about stuff as much, I find. You don't work as hard for it.
True. Used to be, too. I mean, the internet had to come up. There had to be some. Otherwise, we'd go out, we'd go extinct as a species.
Yeah.
Because we used to meet girls by bumming smokes or bumming lights. Can't do that anymore. Okay, so creepypasta. Tell me about it.
Okay,
I'm familiar with creepypasta. Don't tell me about it. Tell them about it.
Okay.
Because I've spent up many a night getting the shit freaked out of me on creepypasta before. It's some good stuff.
It's some good stuff. Creepypasta, we'll just go ahead and go according to the official wiki, are horror-related legends or images that have been copied and pasted around the internet. These internet entries are often brief, user-generated, paranormal stories intended to scare readers. They include gruesome tales of murder, suicide, and otherworldly occurrences. According to Time magazine, the genre had its peak audience in 2010 when it was covered by the New York Times. So all of a sudden, it kind of had an explosion, and the main media outlets started looking at it, you know, wondering what was going on. In the mainstream media, creepypastas relating to the fictitious Slender Man character came to public attention in after the 2014 Slender Man stabbing, which we'll talk about later. After the murder attempt, some creepypasta website admins made statements reminding readers of the line between fiction and reality. And we've talked about that before. You know, it's one thing with my kids. I always make sure they understand, you know, what's fiction, what's reality. That's why, you know, I don't have an issue with my kids watching scary stuff, because they know it's just a story. It's not real.
It's Tom Savini's paycheck. It's got nothing to do with reality.
Some other notable creepypasta characters and stories include Jeff the Killer, Ted the Caver, and Psychosis. In May 2015, Machinima announced plans for a live-action web series created by the one and only Clive Barker, entitled Clive Barker's Creepypasta.
Excellent.
The term is a portmanteau of the words creepy and copypasta, a word used on 4chan in 2006 to describe viral copy and pasted text. So it was just kind of the two coming together. It's not actually a food item. Like I said, some creepypastas, like I mentioned before, was Slender Man, which a lot of folks knew about. We'll get into him a little more later. Jeff the Killer, which was a story accompanied by the image of the character. The story says that a teenager named Jeff was severely injured in an incident of bullying that caused his face to become bleached. Following the incident and having his bandages removed, Jeff realized he liked to harm people, went insane, and cut a smile into his cheeks and burned off his eyelids after returning home from the hospital. After murdering his parents and brother, he is now a serial killer who sneaks into houses at night and whispers, "Go to sleep," before murdering his victims. In 2013, posters at the Imagine Board website 4chan stated that Jeff the Killer's image was an extensively edited picture of a girl who committed suicide in the fall of 2008. It's one of those stories that people pick up on and they wonder if it's real or not, and it just kind of spreads like crazy. You know, it's just one of the many. And that's how these creepypastas work.
Well, if you go to creepypasta, like I said, I've read quite a bit. I mean, it's good for really short form, first person horror stories.
Yep.
And your mileage may vary. It depends on what you consider scary. Sometimes I'll read three or four, and then I'll catch one that is legit. Like, wow, this is really really good. But it's all user generated. Creepypasta works like a internet forum.
Like a message board.
Like a forum. So basically, you write your story and you post it to the forum, and it is, if you look along the side banner of the rules, that everything here is real. The admins will not allow you to do any kind of debunking. If somebody says, "My father is a vampire," you have to, if you're going to comment, if you're going to respond, you have to respond in character.
Yeah.
Now, you can reach out and attempt to help this person by saying, "I don't believe all that, you know, garlic and crosses work, but I do know sunlight works." Like, you can't tell them, like, "Vampires don't exist, you're stupid, don't say it." And everything there is written as if it's real. And, you know, sometimes you read it and it seems like a written story, and sometimes you read it and it sounds like, oh my God, this just happened.
Yeah, you wonder.
And those are the better ones, because right. the ones that are maybe not well written, but earnest, feel more real. But yeah, the admins don't allow you to debunk, and they don't allow you to basically qualify as your, like, inside of your story. You're not supposed to be like, well, this didn't really happen, but or I heard it from, like, it's all real as right. far as they're concerned. Very much like Scary Dad.
Yeah.
We don't debunk. We might come at it with a difference of opinion, but we're not here to debunk any stories.
That's
as
right.
far as we're concerned, everything's true, and we like it that way.
Makes it more fun.
Makes it a lot more fun.
No doubt.
So we've had, like you mentioned, you know, we've had a couple of things coming out of Creepypasta, like the Slender Man, Jeff the Killer. And then there's another forum, which is subreddit, which is No Sleep.
No Sleep, yes.
Which, shout out to the No Sleep podcast. I listen to them religiously. They come out every week. They've got an episode that's maybe an hour and a half long. And then you can buy a season pass, and then you get like a full two and a half, three hour long episode every week. So they got stories that you can opt into, but it's $20 a year mm-hmm. to get all the stories, and they are top notch. They're phenomenal. And so
well, I've read the subreddit, and it's great stuff on there.
It's really good stuff, and it's all voice acted, like old school radio shows.
Yep.
So you've got music, you've got sound effects, and you've got voice actors. Both doing narration and conversation and everything else, and it's really, really masterfully done. Mm-hmm. And they're exactly the same way. They're told in, most of the time, in first person, this happened to me. And some of the best stories I've ever, using air quotes here, read, because it's an audible
yeah.
form, some of the best stories I've ever heard have been on the No Sleep podcast. And it's all free. You can just yep. reach out and push a button, and you've got it right in your phone, you know, an audiobook every week. It's incredible. So, and they talk about Slenderman sometimes.
Well, you can't get away from them when you talk about modern scary things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, to me, I like Slenderman. I think it was a great concept that the guy came up with that created him. It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just some of the videos I've seen made behind Slender Man, there's folks trying to make, that intend on making a movie eventually. He's pretty creepy.
Yeah.
By far. We can go ahead and get into him a little bit.
Yeah, well, let me silence this real quick.
Yeah, no problem.
Sorry, phone's sitting far away so we don't get interference, but then I forgot to turn it on silent, so people are beeping at me.
Okay, the Slender Man is a fictional supernatural character that originated as a creepypasta internet meme.
Let me jump in here. Are you guys all familiar with the concept of a meme? Because a meme is not really a... if you're familiar with an internet meme, you're probably right now picturing a picture of a cat with a white, with a black border phrase around it.
Or a goofy kid smiling.
Or a goofy kid smiling. And that is an internet meme, but that is merely a form of internet meme. A meme is an actual anthropological facet of human consciousness, so to speak. What it is it's, quote, an idea, behavior, or style that spreads from person to person within a culture. A meme acts as a unit for carrying cultural ideas, symbols, or practices that can be transmitted from one mind to another through writing, speech, gestures, rituals, or other imitable phenomena with a mimicked theme. Supporters of the concept regard memes as cultural analogs to genes, and that they self-replicate, mutate, and respond to selective pressures.
Right. And a meme isn't necessarily on the internet. For example, I would think that the original smiley face from back in the day would be considered a meme, a cultural meme.
Right.
That spread like wildfire and showed up everywhere.
I would say something along the lines of the Curly Joe snapping your fingers and,
yep.
and popping your hand. That's not something that somebody would just normally naturally do,
yep.
but it was imitated
a lot.
Yeah,
I still do it to this
yeah.
day.
What's up, Doc? And rabbits rabbits eating carrots when they don't really eat carrots. And that,
right.
Those sorts of things that are, they're just cultural ideas that they don't have any true, they don't have any kind of biological grasp in life, but they do pass through humanity and take on a life of their own.
Yep.
Now, take that internet, you know, put the internet on it, and maybe these things that don't necessarily have a grasp in reality might have a tenuous grasp on whatever the ghost in the machine might be.
Yeah.
So then we get to an internet meme, and you can go on further with the internet meme.
Okay. Internet meme would be considered an activity, concept, catchphrase, or piece of media which spreads often as mimicry from person to person via the internet. Some examples include posting a photo of people lying down in public places called planking and uploading a short video of people dancing to the Harlem Shake. Just different things that just take on a life of their own and just, like I said, spread like wildfire.
Right.
And just because of the internet and the speed at which it works and the audience of which you have there, it seems to go a lot faster than it used to.
Right.
You know? And at the same time, they don't last as long as they used to either.
Some do. Slender Man does,
yeah. But things like, you know, you have the, I guess you could say, the internet meme of the week, where, you know, you had the Harlem Shake for a little while, then you had the Ice Bucket Challenge, and mm-hmm. you know, you have all these different things that they flare up really, really big, but then people are looking for the next one really, really fast, and then that one goes, just blows up. Meme is an idea, behavior, or style that spreads from person to person within a culture. Internet meme may take the form of an image, hyperlink, video, website, or just a hashtag. It may be just a word or phrase, including an intentional misspelling. These small movements tend to spread from person to person via social networks, blogs, direct email, or news sources. They may relate to various existing internet cultures or communication facilities. Fads and sensations tend to grow rapidly on the internet because the instant communication facilitates word-of-mouth transmission. The original word meme was coined by Richard Dawkins in a 1976 book, The Selfish Gene, which was way before the internet. It's an attempt to explain the way cultural information spreads. Internet memes are a subset of this general meme concept, specific to the culture and environment of the internet itself. Go ahead.
Concepts, things that you hear, if you've ever heard somebody say that they're adulting. What I like to call the verbing of nouns. Whenever you take a noun, you put an ing on the end, and you're adulting, you're verbing, you're whatever it is. Everybody knows what this is, whether you use it, whether you call your girlfriend bae or not, you know what that means.
Right, you've seen it.
Whether you approve of it or not, whether you like it or not. And what it's saying in this research here is that memes like calling your girlfriend bae, that's something that will either take hold and survive, and it'll mutate and develop over time. So it might shift from baby to baby or some other sort of thing. And if it's successful and survives, then it becomes part of the cultural zeitgeist forever. Not necessarily maybe forever, but for a long time, maybe a generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then others will die out relatively quickly, like the Harlem Shake. There's only so long that song's going to be popular.
Right.
So a lot of it maybe is in phrases, little actions, little quirks. When it was us, probably one of the biggest memes going around was people talking like Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
It had a source, but it took on a life of its own, and some people were good at it and others weren't, and it was a cultural thing for a long time. And
I was thinking, where's the beef?
Right.
That's an excellent example also.
Little catchphrases and stuff. So then you have something like the Slender Man, who has really become, for lack of a better word, an urban legend.
Yeah.
At this point.
Because it has grown into a thing of its own. People have taken it and just use it as a way of, similar to the way, you know, stories of vampires come about. You know, people needed a way to explain what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Slender Man was something that you could use to explain certain things, or even use it as a tool to gain certain things. So, you know, just to reinvent it, to add them to different things, to just to scare people. You know, he's really, really grown tremendously.
Well, and the Slender Man is an interesting thing because although he's kind of an urban legend, like, you, the internet's full of stories of the Slender Man. And the Slender Man has actually come off the internet and caused violence in the real world.
Yeah.
The Slender Man himself didn't do it, but people did it on his behalf.
Yeah.
And
also, he's kind of reminiscent of characters from our past that help explain those characters from our past, from certain movies and everything.
Correct. But the thing about Slender Man is that we know exactly where he started.
The person that created him.
We know the person that created him, a guy named Eric Knudsen, who's also known as Victor Surge, in 2009 created the Slender Man on the Something Awful forums as part of a contest. Or maybe not as a contest, but as a... it was sort of a contest. Yeah, I don't know if there was a
picture
prize.
Contest, if not mistaken.
So he's a thin, unnaturally tall man with a blank and usually featureless face and wearing a black suit. And in doing some of the research, Victor Surge himself said a lot of times with folklore and urban legends, they've all got some sort of degree of separation. You always have somebody who knows somebody who knows the source. But nobody ever actually knows the source of the legend. That's what gives it its gravitas.
Yeah.
Because you can never follow it all the way back. Slender Man is pretty unique in the fact that we know the source.
The source owns rights to it.
Yeah. The source owns rights to it, and yet the Slender Man still manages to persist and sort of gain a life of its own outside of this, what would normally be required, like almost scientific. Like if you know, let's say, for example, if you know a certain urban legend, like the guy who got hung at the haunted house.
Yeah.
So the urban legend goes that there was a guy who worked at a haunted house, and he slipped and he fell and he hung himself and died, and he hung there for a couple of days while people were going through the haunted house seeing him, but they thought he was part of the attraction.
Yep.
Scary, urban legend, and true. It actually is verified. So, scientifically, in order for that thing to be like Mythbusters verified, you had to go to that place in Oklahoma or Ohio, wherever it is, and say, well, this is where it happened, this is what makes it real. We can do that with Slender Man, except for we know for a fact that he's not, and yet he continues to grow.
Yeah.
Which is very bizarre. Very, very strange to me.
It is. It's not dying down. You know, it's... He's there. He's part of our culture now, and that's it. You know, people just take him in different ways. Okay, as you said, it was created on a thread in Something Awful internet forum. The thread was a Photoshop contest in which users were challenged to edit everyday photographs to appear paranormal. Mr. Knudsen contributed two black and white photos of groups of children, to which he added a tall, thin, spectral figure wearing a black suit. Although previous entries had consisted solely of photographs, he decided to go ahead and add a little text to it. Supposedly from witnesses of the photograph, describing the abductions of the groups of children and giving the character the name the Slender Man. The quote on the first photograph was, "We didn't want to go, we didn't want to kill them, but his persistent silence and outstretched arms horrified and comforted us at the same time." And he had it noted to 1983, photographer unknown, presumed dead. Then the quote on the second picture, "One of two recovered photographs from the Sterling City Library blaze, notable for being taken the day which 14 children vanished, and for what is referred to as the Slender Man. Deformities cited as film defects by officials. A fire at library occurred 1 week later. Actual photograph confiscated as evidence." And that one he attributed to 1986. Photographer Mary Thompson, missing since June 13th, 1986. And just adding that text to the photographs kind of gave them, you know, a little bit more cred.
Gravitas, yeah.
To make people think that it may have been real. And that's where it blew up from. Knudsen says he was inspired to create the Slender Man primarily by Zach Parsons' That Insidious Beast, Stephen King's The Mist, reports of Shadow People, Mothman, and the Mad Gasser of Mattoon. Other inspirations for the character were the tall man from Phantasm, which that's one of the first things I think of when I see it, H.P. Lovecraft, the surrealist work of William S. Burroughs, and the survival horror video games Silent Hill and Resident Evil. His intention was to formulate something whose motivations can barely be comprehended. and caused unease and terror in a general population. Other pre-existing fictional or legendary creatures often thought to have inspired the Slender Man include the Gentleman, black-suited, pale, bald demons from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode Hush, Men in Black, many accounts of which grant them uncanny appearance with an unnatural walk and oriental features, and The Question, a DC Comics superhero with a blank face, whose secret identity is Victor Sage, a name very similar to Knutson's alias Victor Surge. There's been books written about Slender Man, people just, about this phenomena. It's crazy how he made a picture and it took off.
Yeah. And the fact that most of the time Slender Man himself is just standing over there.
He's not doing anything.
He's not actually doing anything.
Not saying anything.
You see him, and then all of the disaster has happened, and then he's gone. And
okay, and some of the things that have come up of Slender Man. In 2012, Slender Man was adapted into a video game titled Slender, the 8 Pages. Several popular variants of the game followed, including Slender Man Shadow, the Slender Man for iOS, which became the second most popular app download. Then the sequel to Slender, the 8 Pages, called Slender the Arrival, was released in 2013. And there have been several independent films about the Slender Man that have been released or are in development, including Entity, one called The Slender Man, which was released free online after a Kickstarter campaign. In 2013, it was announced that Marble Hornets would become a feature film. In 2015, the film adaptation, Always Watching, a Marble Hornets story, was released on video on demand. And in 2016, Sony Pictures subsidiary Screen Gems partnered with Mythology Entertainment to bring Slender Man film into theaters, which I think they're working on that right now. But interesting, the Kickstarter one that was released free online, what happened with them is they realized they didn't have the rights to it. Once they had the Kickstarter program, is they couldn't make any money off of it at that point. So they just went ahead and released it free online right there. When Knutson kind of came out and said, wait,
this is mine. Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's taken a mind of its own. And as we were saying earlier, in real life, they have had some pretty bad incidents occur. The worst of which is the Waukesha stabbings in Wisconsin. May 31st, 2014, two 12-year-old girls in Wisconsin allegedly held down and stabbed a 12-year-old classmate 19 times. When questioned later by authorities, they reportedly claimed they wished to commit a murder as a first step to becoming proxies for the Slender Man. They had read about it online. So they essentially wanted to, become tools of the Slender Man avatar in real life, to kind of scare people, try to get people to think Slender Man exists, and like I said, become an avatar
to prove that he exists. There's a documentary, and it's creepy. I've only watched little parts of it on YouTube, because it's the discussion with the little girls, and they're just like, dude, you realize you took your friend out to the woods and stabbed her 19 times? And they're just kind of like, that's what he wanted.
It's 12-year-old girls, it's 12-year-old kids.
It's crazy.
They also state that they were afraid that Slender Man would kill their families if they did not commit the murder. The victim was able to crawl from the woods where she had been left to reach a roadside. Passing cyclists intervened, and the victim survived the attack. Both attackers have been diagnosed with mental illness, but have also been charged as adults and are facing up to 65 years in prison. One of the girls reportedly said Slender Man watches her, can read minds, and can teleport. Experts testified in court that she also said she conversed with Lord Voldemort and one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Again, we're talking about 12-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things where, she may have a documented mental illness that is causing this, but it's a matter of teaching young minds that have these imaginations the difference between reality and fiction. It's very important.
And man, I don't want to go off like kids today, but I see it in my own daughter, man. It's just, screens are everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
There's screens everywhere. You can't go sit down at a nice dinner without a screen. There's screens in the back seat of the car. And hey man, I'm an internet nerd. I'm sitting here doing a podcast. When I get home tonight, I'm gonna scroll around on a couple social media pages and dick around on the internet. So I'm not saying that it, but man, go outside and play.
Yeah.
And even then, you see kids outside playing, and they're just, I was at Disney World, and there's kids sitting in strollers on their phones at Disney World. And I'm just like, oh my God, these
tons
poor
going
kids.
On to get their attention.
Yeah. And they're sitting there playing little Minecraft game, like doodly doodly. I'm like, they can't be in Disney World, the happiest place on earth. So yeah, I mean, if you go to church all day, you become pretty pious. If you spend all your time on the internet and horror forums,
it's going to take over your life.
It's going to take over your mind.
A few other incidents that have happened after hearing the story, a woman from Cincinnati told a TV reporter that her 13-year-old daughter had attacked her with a knife and had written macabre fiction, some involving the Slender Man, who the mother said motivated the attack. And in September of 2014, 14-year-old girl in Florida, our favorite state, allegedly set her family's house on fire while her mother and 9-year-old brother were inside. Police reported that the teenager had been reading online stories about Slender Man, as well as a manga called Soul Eater. Eddie Daniels of the Pasco Sheriff's Office said the girl had visited the website that contains a lot of the Slender Man information and stories. It would be safe to say there is a connection, according to the police. During an early 2015 epidemic of suicide attempts by young people ages 12 to 24 on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, Slender Man was cited as an influence, though Glawa Sioux Tribe president noted that many Native Americans traditionally believe in a suicide spirit similar to the Slender Man. So they kind of use the Slender Man as a way of connecting it to one of their own things. And yeah, they like I said, it becomes part of reality for some people.
Well, and we're cynical. I would have to say that we're quite cynical because we grew up where we already did an episode. We have to re-record the episode, but we grew up in a world where, based on a true story, well, we thought it meant something, but it didn't really mean something. But as far as I was concerned, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was out of history.
Yeah, it really happened.
It really happened, based on a true story. Why wouldn't you believe it? I mean, I'm all kinds of stuff that's like, even like war movies and stuff. Just like, oh, well, this really happened. You know, like Pearl Harbor, not the Michael Bay, but your, like John Wayne movies and Green Berets and stuff. Oh, this stuff really happened. Like, holy shit. Well, now you can dig in with the internet and debunk it real fast, but do you really want to? Like, what floats your boat? Do you really want to know that your favorite heavy metal band, their hair isn't real? Like, right. You know, like there's that little bit of fantasy.
But you know, that use of the internet for debunking stuff can also, it's a double-edged sword, because, you know, do you also look at the internet as a way of, you know, confirming something is real? You know, you find a website where something is written as though it's real.
Well, and that's,
you assume that it is because it's on the internet.
Well, that's exactly what happened with the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
I remember that quite specifically. And it was they meant to do this, so it wasn't like I just got duped and I was one.
Yeah, they were trying to fool.
But
you.
I remember my buddy was pretty internet savvy. Like this guy, shout out to John if you're listening. John had he was doing like networked up video games, and he had multiple screens, and you go over to his house and play you're basically playing a cracked version of Quake that was more or less what future games would become in the now, with the running around multiple areas, shooting each other up and stuff like that. And I don't know what they're called. They're just first-person shooters.
First-person shooters.
But, but you're networked in and you're fighting.
You have teams that you're fighting with.
So you're fighting that guy in real time, and your screens are facing away from each other, so you can't see, like, he's over by the van, right? But he was pretty internet savvy and had his computers. And I heard about the Blair Witch Project. I read about the Blair Witch Project. This is back in like 97, 98, right? Whenever it was. Before it came out. Maybe 6 months before it came out. And I think there was like a magazine article or something. And it was like the ad for the book, for the movie. And it was like, oh, back in this day, you know, these kids went missing or whatever. And he's like, well, let's go to, and this was, I think it was Yahoo. It was before the good old Google. But we went to Yahoo. The Blair Witch Project happened in Burkittsville, Maryland. And if you Googled Burkittsville, Maryland, it was a town in Maryland. It had an establishment. It had, like, if you go to a Wikipedia page and it shows you all the stuff about a town, like its elevation and its rainfall and all that stuff, it was all there. And then it was talking about the legend and the Blair Witch and all this stuff, and it was as real as anything I'd ever seen. And this was long before the movie was ever released, and it was like, it was touted as if it was a documentary, and there was absolutely no way to know that it wasn't one.
Because it hadn't been debunked, it hadn't been released. You only had the information that they released and allowed out there.
And it worked. And
it was a phenomenon by far.
Right.
It was,
and, I mean, using that kind of, like you say, you know, you're going straight to the truth source.
And it's saying that it's true.
And it's saying that it's true. What are you going to do? Be like, I still don't believe it. Like, my little cynical bone was kind of going, I don't know if it's an ongoing investigation into a disappearance. Why would they let them have that footage for a movie? But that's about the only thing I can think of.
Right.
Like, it just seemed a little like, if it's like, why would the family allow this? But other than that,
there's no reason to think it wasn't true.
No reason to think it wasn't true. And
it was well done. They did exactly what they set out to do.
Right. And, so, and then they did the same thing with Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, which I enjoyed that movie a lot. That was the same thing. They the way they marketed it before it was released, it had you thinking it was real.
Absolutely.
It should really happen. They found these videotapes in this house.
Right. And it was a good, scary movie.
To me, I prefer Paranormal Activity to Blair Witch. To me, that one was more real as far as being able to just immerse yourself into the movie. And that one was scary. That thing still makes me jump.
Yeah, it's... I liked Paranormal Activity. I liked Blair Witch for its... I'll be honest. Coming out of Blair Witch, I was scared.
Yeah.
Like, I was creeped out for the rest of the evening. It's also a little bit nauseous.
From watching the camera shake and everything. I think that's what Paranormal Activity kind of was able
to...
Everything was on still cam. You know, everything was on stand. So, you know, you didn't have that same effect. Blair Witch, for what it was, though, it started a trend. And it just started a... It was badass when you think about what those guys did with that movie.
Oh, absolutely. And then, well, with found footage, they kind of overdid it. Found footage is a good thing when it's part of an overarching story. When they do found footage as the whole story with the shaky cam, it gets hard to watch.
Right.
So
now the quarantine, the first quarantine, I like the way they did that one. I don't know if you remember that one. It was the news reporter is on assignment with the fire department, and they end up going to this apartment unit where there's somebody sick, and they go inside and there's somebody that has symptoms of rabies. And all of a sudden, they get locked inside. They don't know what's going on. And they're actually quarantined from the rest of the city.
Oh, wow.
And they're not letting anybody know what's going on inside. And what ended up happening is there was somebody that had done... essentially, he was an anarchist that wanted to use chemical warfare. And he developed this strain of rabies that was spread around through rats. And he was in that building. And his rats had been allowed to escape through the building. And that's a crazy-ass movie. It was like an accelerated form of rabies that, you know...
It turned
within,
into zombie.
Within 2 hours, you were zombie-like. And the rats were, like, just real aggressive. They'd come after you. It's a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody survives. And it's a found footage one. But found footage is only about 40% of it. The rest of it is actual filming the thing so you can, like, just get into the characters and find out what's going on with the storyline and stuff. So it's a pretty good one. Quarantine's good. Quarantine 2 wasn't as good. It took place on an airplane. But the first one was pretty cool.
Was it Wesley Snipes? Always bet on black. good old Wes. Should have paid your taxes, man. We loved you.
I can't wait till he starts doing the con scene. I don't know if he ever will, but...
When he needs some money, he will.
I don't know. From what I understand, he's kind of...
Set.
He's set in his ways. He doesn't feel as though he'll ever have to do anything like that. He has a big ego. But he's also been involved in some pretty phenomenal stuff.
He's a good guy. I mean, he's good at what he does.
I mean, look, think about the movies that he's been in. I mean, I was watching Major League the other day. I loved him in that movie.
I loved him in Demolition Man.
Demolition Man, he was good.
He was really good. He's just over the top. When a director's just like, take whatever it is you're doing and just kick it up like 10 notches.
Right.
That's what he did.
And his portrayal of Blade. I mean, he got into that Blade character so big. I mean, just the training he did with martial arts just to make sure he could make that movie, it was pretty impressive.
Too bad he was fighting against Steven Dorff.
Could have the first one.
Could have thought of some better people. Whatever.
He was the money they were at right then. That's who they picked up. So, but Stephen Dorff at that time he was fairly hot. He had just come off of what was the movie he had just come off of? Damn it! It was a movie he had just come off of that had done pretty well.
Well, I'm just thinking
two movies he did
when they put like Rocky up against Ivan. That's a beast right there.
Yeah.
When you put Wesley Snipes would have just whipped the crap out of him and sent him home. But anyway, that's for a whole other story.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Just one day we could spend a minute talking about the evolution of the Blade character from the original Marvel comics to what he became with Wesley Snipes, which would be a cool little story.
Well, guys. Speaking of viral, we'd like for you to make us viral. Make us a meme. Take our logo, put some white block letters, and just type in awesome, and then share it with all your Twitter followers, all your Facebook followers. Tell them they're going to die. We have the antidote. It's buried about 30 minutes deep into every one of our episodes, and only one of them is the real, so they have to listen to them all, or else they're going to die. Like, share, comment. As you're listening to this, I'm actually on my way home. I'm literally in the car as we speak on my way home from Texas Frightmare Weekend. So I can't tell you how it was because I haven't been there yet, but I'm on my way home from it right now. So we'll do a short episode because next week, Scotty here is going to be at Comic Palooza.
Yes.
He's going to have the opportunity to meet Freddy Krueger himself.
Yeah,
if only for a moment.
Yes.
So he can tell us, you know, all about that.
And don't forget, speaking of Comic Palooza, to make sure you come and see us out there. I shall be busy working at the airport for a few days, but I will be at the show itself all day Saturday and Sunday. So if you're going to be there, let us know. Reach out to us. You know, let's meet up. We got a few little pieces of swag we might be able to give to you.
We'll share a $15 pop, slice of pizza.
Something. I'll even buy you a brew if you're of age.
In the meantime, guys, have a good time at either Frightmare or, well, you can't do that because you would have done that yesterday. Hope you had a good time at Frightmare. Hope you have a good time at Comic Palooza. And we'll talk to you very soon. Keep it scary.
Peace out.
Catch a greyhound bus and ride.